it is a partnership with the city and the various bureaus in the city, with the business community, with the county, the various levels of government. I think that's a key, and with the social service agencies, because ultimately I think the social service agencies are the experts in this. I can't become an expert in how to deal with these multifaceted problems of homelessness and mental illness and drug addiction. But I think the business community has demonstrated that they are engaged in this issue and contributing resources and want to be part of coming up with, you know, some of the solutions. So I would say partnerships is first. Streamlining the dollars that we are spending in terms of, you know, working with the county to have better coordination and less duplication of resources, I think is very important. I think utilizing the social service agencies, because they have the unique abilities, not trying to reinvent an approach. I think they do have a lot of the knowledge about how to work on these issues and what needs to happen. So those are the things I would recommend. And I think, you know, we need to have all the parts working together. So those are what I would see as. And then, you know, I have to say this as a business person, that I think if we can improve our economy and help provide more opportunities and develop our workforce, that those are some of the gaps we need to fill. We need to help people become more successful in their lives, and that's multifaceted. It includes having a job, it includes, you know, having access to healthcare, it includes getting help when they need it. So, you know, I definitely think that that's part of the picture as well, as having a healthy, productive economy where we can bring people in and give them the opportunities. You know, ultimately, it's self-directed. Everyone has to be self-directed in managing their life, and if we can help give people tools and stop gaps where it's needed, I think those are the long-term solutions.
At the risk of being accused of being a plagiarist, I'm going to take your statement and put it on my website, because I think you just stated the case beautifully and succinctly. And the only piece that I would add to it is that in a very, very tight rental market where a white-hot local economy is driving prices through the roof, if we don't increase the supply, then we could clone Mark 100 times, and we're still not going to be able to get people into units because they just aren't available. So I think, I hope part of it, and I embrace everything you just said, I think you stated it beautifully, is to challenge local government to speed up the supply of housing, because the market's is not meeting that demand right now, and we literally have too many people priced out. And I think that has to be part of the piece, and there has to be a funding strategy. It can't just be city and county being more efficient. They have to be more efficient, but we're talking about a delta on the cost side that dwarfs any efficiencies the county and the city can come up with.
Thanks, Debbie. Yes, so let's turn to Mark Jolin and Dennis Lundberg to tell us how you think this is working from your standpoint. Again, as we discuss this, looking for not just how it's working, but what do we need to do differently, or who's not engaged that should be, as well as a progress report on what we accomplished last summer.
Yeah, I'll jump in, and I apologize. I'm getting over a sore throat. I'm going to echo most of what's already been said today, that, you know, I deeply applaud the Central Precinct's work. This is, Israel actually took the words out of my mouth. This is something that at Janus we've been striving for at least a decade that I've been out on the street, this level of partnership. And I've said this before, I think it's not just a matter of a shift back to community policing and putting police on the streets and out of cars. I think it's also a matter of putting the right officers with the right training out on the streets. And I deeply respect all the men that have been doing the foot patrol. Frankly, for me, and I've been doing street outreach with Janus for over 13 years, it's like having a whole nother team of street outreach workers out there. Their level of empathy and compassion, and their the way that they're engaging young people who are experiencing homelessness should be applauded. And I agree with Israel that it should be a national model. That said, if I can muster through, I would just briefly like to address the your question about the 60% roughly of young folks, well, I don't know if they were young. It would be interesting to know what the demographic breakout there is. But briefly, I would like to say that Janus Youth Programs operates the only two homeless youth shelters in Multnomah County, Porchlight and Streetlight. They were on the screen. And we shelter 60 young people in that building every night of the year. We bump the capacity up to 70 during the winter. And I want to be clear, we run at capacity all year round. If you were to go to the New Avenues for Youth or outside-in drop-in programs or day programs, they're at capacity every day. And we screen roughly 1,000 young people into the homeless youth continuum every year. Those are unduplicated. So we have a system that's doing great work and keeping roughly 1,000 young people off the streets at night and both in the day and the night. My guess is that a large number of the 60% would be youth identified, which would be for Janus 15 to 23-year-olds. And there's a lot of reasons for that, most of which I don't have time to get into, but we could briefly talk about the effects of trauma on the developing brain, which is well researched now, and is where a lot of the funding for the youth systems across the country now come from, and why we were able to expand the age of youth from 21 to 23, partially because we know the prefrontal cortex doesn't develop until 25 in a healthy young person, and we know that trauma significantly impacts the development of the brain. And I think we can't underestimate that overestimate that. We're also reeling from a particularly difficult year in the homeless youth continuum. We've had multiple suicides from our clients, and I just want to underscore again the vulnerability of young people out on the street. Thank you so much.
Entirely. Tell us, speaking of funding, what happened with this grant funding that you had but now are not going to have any longer?
Yeah, I know. There is an irony to the fact that I've been begging for a police partnership with Yellow Brick Road Street Outreach for 13 years, and we got it, and now we lost our funding. But Janus is funded through a multitude of streams, but the street outreach component, which is what we call Yellow Brick Road, is federally funded through the street outreach programs coming down through the Family and Children Bureau. And basically, through a clerical error, the Portland program wasn't refunded this year. They accidentally funded our Vancouver program, but it was an error. They thought that they had funded Portland. The complication that came with it is that we went to move with the budget for Vancouver to create a regional outreach approach that would allow us to keep my two outreach workers on the streets. The difficulty that we just learned from the feds is that if we were to do that, we would appear funded for the next RFP cycle. So we wouldn't be able to reapply for full funding come spring of 2015 if we share money that our Vancouver program received in the fall of 2014. So as of October 1st, the Portland Yellow Brick Road Street Outreach Program has been unfunded. That's the most succinct version I can give. That means we don't have a supply budget. So every year, you know, we give out about 300 pairs of new socks a month to young people 15 to 23 on the streets. We give out sleeping bags. And all of these things are a primary tool for engaging young people in services. Our goal is actually to escort young people to Porchlight Shelter and get them in for the night. But we use these supplies as the icebreaker and the tool that actually allows us to engage well with young people who are inherently mistrustful of adults for really good reasons, given their backgrounds and their childhood experiences. So it's a blow for us, for sure.
So your funding lapsed October 1st?
Yeah, correct.
For the federal fiscal year?
That's right.
But you will be able to apply the next fiscal year? Is that...
Yeah. The RFPs usually roll out around March, and awards are granted around mid-September. And the difficulty we just learned a couple weeks ago from our regional rep is that if we were to create that larger regional approach and sort of remodel our program, we would appear funded when the next RFP rolls out.
And so it leaves us in a federal agency? Is it Health and Human Services?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. And it leaves us with basically a fiscal year footfall, shortfall. And one more thing before I turn it over to Mark, I just want to point out again that the 60% number makes a lot of sense for me as someone who's devoted my professional career to working with vulnerable young people. The model that we use is called Stages of Change. It's a really simple, basic model that comes out of the treatment world, but we've applied it to young people experiencing homelessness because so many of them are also experiencing co-occurring mental health issues and addiction issues. And what the evidence suggests is that 60% is a perfectly normal number for young people, at least the 15 to 25 year range that I work with, to be highly resistant to engaging in services. There's really good reasons for that, and most of them hinge around childhood trauma, the effects on the brain. About roughly 80% of the young females we work with have been sexually abused in the home. There's a great deal of mistrust for adults on the street, which is why street outreach is such an effective model. It's people like me who go out and engage where young people are at, both geographically and developmentally, in an effort to rebuild relationships and rebuild bridges that have been undermined through young people's experience.
Thanks very much.
And I apologize for my voice. I can usually talk for hours.
You soldiering on and being here this morning, so thank you. Mark, thoughts?
Good morning. Thanks for the opportunity to be here. Just on Dennis's last point, I mean, I think all of us who do this work with folks out on the street, it's the process is one of coming back over and over again and building the trust that gets someone to the point where they actually believe that your offer of service is really an offer of ongoing support and relationship, the kind that it's going to take beyond just, you know, a referral to a program that's very full. So I'll echo that. This Foot Patrol project, the work that's been going on in Southeast, we've at JOIN had partnerships of various kinds with the police bureau for the last 15 years that we've been actually closer to 20 now. It's always been mostly with individual officers who, as Commander Day said, have always been out there to practicing these kinds of relationship-based approaches to the work. Those resonate with the way that, I mean, frankly, I heard Sergeant DeLand talk last night at the Civility Summit. I would have been proud if one of my outreach workers had been talking about our folks like that and the approach to relationship. So that, that approach to the work has been present, but I think as Commander Day said, it's been organized here and it's getting support at the highest level within the police bureau, and it's going to make a world of difference. It did this summer in this pilot area. It did in Central East Side, and not just for addressing the problems that come to the community's attention, but it made a big difference for the folks on the street and how they experienced the police bureau, how they experienced having to clean up their stuff and move along, not being able to stay where they might have necessarily wanted to be staying. We didn't solve that problem with this. We still have people who are camping, people generating complaints, having to manage the fact that we have thousands of people who are living their personal private lives out in public space. That's still with us. What changed was how the officers who were tasked with responding to that were engaging people in the conversation about that. How can we not just address the impact that you're having on the surrounding neighborhood by being out here, but how can we help you, recognizing that us coming here to ask you to move, ask you to clean up, is going to have an adverse impact on you. We're here to help address that as well. And then bringing in the social service piece, right? That yes, there is the day-to-day management of the fact that we have folks sleeping on our sidewalks, living on our sidewalks. Ultimately, the solution to that is a permanent place of their own to live in. And so really connecting more intentionally the police engagement with social service engagement. Again, we've been doing it in various ways for a long time, but this took it to a new level. There was a new focus. And frankly, because of the investment that City Council made in last year's bump, the $1.7 million, a good chunk of that went into expanding our capacity to provide services to some of the folks in sort of high-impact areas that police are working with. We were able to house, thus far, we've got about 69 folks in or in process of going in just on the police partnership side. That's in part through the work of Cascadia Behavioral Health Care and some expanded street outreach that they have available now through the city, through some of our work. So But as Commissioner Fish was saying, and others have identified, the connection to service, the ability to truly problem solve for the folks who we're talking about, does depend on there being housing resources available, mental health services available, and we're struggling to meet that need, and especially on the housing side. Across the board right now, the tight rental market, the escalating rents, and frankly, the competition for units for people who don't have the kinds of challenges that many of the folks who we're talking about have, I mean, we are really having to work a lot harder than we used to. The process takes a lot more time than it used to and a lot more money to get some of these folks housed. So that may be the single biggest challenge we've had. So the approach is really good, even if we can't expand services. But I think to really capitalize on what this approach represents as an opportunity, we need to be building both the police capacity to do this kind of work and continue to expand the opportunities for housing for the folks that we're engaging out there.
Thank you. Questions for Mark? And then our last two presenters are Paul and Miranda from the Hawthorne District. Your experience and how this worked, recommendations for the future, thoughts. Thank you.
I don't know if we can have both of these on, or maybe we can share one. Thanks for this opportunity. Miranda and I have not had a chance to put our heads together about this, but we'll fake it a little bit. I have just a bullet list of things. I wanted to say, let me start by saying I'm Paul Fishman. My wife Sherry and I live, and I'll refer to Commander Day's geographic reference. We live four doors down from three doors down. So we're basically right around the corner off of Hawthorne, a very short block off of Hawthorne on Madison. And we've been there 12 years. It got to the point last year that we very, very seriously were thinking, this neighborhood is not as enjoyable as it was when we moved here. It's really gotten pretty intense, and maybe we should just sell our house and find some other place to live. Or let's try again, because we know a lot of the neighbors, the merchants on Hawthorne, people in the neighborhood, have the same feelings and sets of issues. Let's try once again to organize people and work together and work with the city to try to get a handle on the scene and see if we can make it better. I feel very out of place here because I'm not a social service provider. I'm not a police officer. I'm just a guy who lives a block off of Hawthorne. And we've been getting to know a lot of people. I wanted to start by saying that Sherry and I went to the Civility Summit last night, and there were a few other people in the room who were there. And a lot of what I've heard today relates to that, and it, a code of conduct or civility. I personally feel that we've lost a lot of that in Portland. When we moved here in 1978, and I actually worked for the summer for the city of Portland downtown, it was a wonderful place. As a guy who grew up in Chicago, it was very familiar to me, having an urban atmosphere, but a very, very friendly urban atmosphere, very clean. People took pride in how the street and sidewalk looked and put their trash in the trash can and were friendly, etc. Okay? I'd like to be able to say that that's what it's like today, but things have changed. And I also want to, first I want to talk about the walking patrol. And we've, in our neighborhood, and Miranda, you're going to jump in, so just grab the mic. In our neighborhood, we've gotten to know a group of police officers as people, not just guys in uniform who drive around in those special cars, okay? And really thinking about it, and last night listening to Sergeant Beland and talking to other people, as an individual and as a citizen, I've learned a lot from this police patrol. These folks are have demonstrated a very, very high degree of compassion and understanding and professionalism that has added a tremendous amount of new dimensions in my head about what a police officer is. And so I can imagine what it has added in the heads of other people. And one quick anecdote, when Mayor Hales came out and walked Hawthorne, I tagged along, and there was one point where Sergeant DeLand saw a couple of young guys across the street and whistled to them, and they came over. Each one of them gave the sergeant a big hug and asked him how he was today, and he did likewise. And then they were introduced to the mayor, and they proceeded to tell the mayor that they travel around the country a lot. That's what they do. And that Portland, the city of Portland, is the only city in the country that they've been to where they can actually have a conversation with police officers. And they're not being hassled. The conversation isn't about being hassled. They're having a conversation, and the police officers know them by name. And they thought that was great. And I don't know if you remember that, Mayor, but that's impressive to me. So let me quickly go through some things. I have a bullet list that I quickly threw together. The walking patrol, and I've talked to a lot of the merchants and people in the neighborhood who live in the neighborhood. To a person, everyone has said, yes, things have been very, very much better this past summer compared to the previous several years. Meaning the scene out on the street, and not just on Hawthorne, but in the residential areas adjacent to Hawthorne, things have improved tremendously because of the officers walking around, getting to know people, understanding the problems, understanding who the bad actors are, and dealing with them, and being there to help. And that has been tremendously important. Everyone I've talked to also said, you know, if this doesn't continue, it'll just go back to the way it was very quickly. And we know that. We can see that. There are people coming in all the time. There's a movement of people throughout. You know. So we do want to emphasize that we're very hopeful that this isn't a one-time deal, that this is a model of things that are going to expand and be continued, not just in our neighborhood, hopefully, but you know, citywide would be terrific, because it's really, from my point of view and the people I've talked to, it's really the way that police work can be done very, very effectively. And I think if you looked at I don't know, but I think if you looked at the cost, you know, the economics of it, if you're reducing crime by spending money on foot patrols, then, you know, what's the net result economically? And I would say it's, hopefully, it's probably a better net result, okay? Do you want to? I'm going to maybe each point I'm just going to turn to you and say, you want to add anything?
I'll just add one thing. So you came into our store during the summer, which was great. And these guys are awesome. And when they come into the store now and say, hey, Miranda, how's it going? Anything you need to tell us or anything we need to know? Like, no, actually. a couple of years ago, that was really different. And I think there's, so the travelers who, it's just kind of, you know, what they do. It's their job to come out and just, you know, sit and kind of get money and whatever. And that's great. But there are some more aggressive people that kind of came with that mix as well. Mean people, I guess. I think that's kind of what, at least, so I'm right on 37th and Hawthorne, which is the corner. That's where everyone likes to stand, play, sing, you know, sit late. That's fine. It's what makes Hawthorne Hawthorne. But I think when you have kind of, it was like a mean element, more aggressive element that came in, and that's, yeah, that's just, that keeps people away. It scares people. And which is too bad, because Hawthorne's a great street. You know, I'm the vice president of the HBBA, and we've, you know, tried to do a lot. We don't have as much participation as I would like, but with Paul, Paul's been great. He's really helped a lot in getting people more involved and stuff. But we are all about the foot patrol. We think it's fantastic. It's really helped a lot. We just have a lot of, you know, people that we have a lot of younger people that just that don't want housing. They it's because they want to make money, you know, and they want to kind of be out where things are happening. And I kind of understand that, you know, but when it's cold or when it's boiling hot, I don't get it. And I don't know where they go, you know, and I feel, you know, bad for them, but they're not the problem. It was the really, really aggressive people, you know, dealing drugs in my doorway and they wouldn't move. And, you know, it's like, I don't want to come to my store the next day and have the windows smashed. So it's, you know, it's great that they're walking around and stuff. So I'm a big, big fan.
One of the things that I heard today also was the partnerships and coordination between the police bureau and other city bureaus and social service agencies and other organizations. And to me, that's another key. And I'd like to think that as a community, we're looking at all of these things comprehensively, not trying to compartmentalize things and say, okay, the cops will deal with this and somebody else will deal with that and somebody else will deal with that. Because so many of these things are interrelated that these partnerships and coordination efforts, I think, are the real key to solving a lot of these issues. I sent out an email to our email list, the Hawthorne Neighbors email list. And for those who don't know, Hawthorne Neighbors is a very ad hoc. It's not an organization. It's a group of people who live and work on Hawthorne or very close to Hawthorne. And we have a small group of people who are very active, and we have a pretty large email list of people who want to be kept in the loop. So I sent an email out a couple of weeks ago, and I said, hey, I'm going to be at the city council. Give me some feedback on what's worked, what hasn't worked, what kind of issues are you still having, et cetera, et cetera. I got a handful of responses. Everyone said, yeah, this police patrol has been fantastic. It's really, really helped, okay? I got some other issues, too, that people wanted to highlight, so I'm going to run through those quickly, and that's kind of what the coordination piece I'm talking about. Several people talked about garbage and litter. And when you think about it, in the city of Portland, Oregon, you don't have trash and recycling receptacles on every corner. So when we tell people, you know, don't throw your garbage in the parking strip in front of my house, don't dump your garbage on the sidewalk in Hawthorne, and they say, well, okay, where should I put it? There's no answer. So how do we make that happen? How do we, you know, and I've talked to some people at the city about that, and the response was, if the merchants want to put some trash cans out, that's fine. I don't think that's the solution. So there's another coordination piece between bureaus and how to figure that one out. Because that is a big problem. And there's a related one, which is what I call, and everybody else I've talked to calls, illegal dumping, but there are some people who call it free cycling. You have a box of stuff you don't want, you put it down by the curb. Oh, I don't need this old couch or reclining chair anymore, I'll just put it out by the curb. It will magically disappear, right? No, it's illegal dumping. And we had an article in the Sunnyside Neighborhood News, the November issue, and I have brought some copies if you want them, about, you know, illegal dumping and how to dispose of things you don't want anymore. And Metro has a program. They have the RID program that will come out and not only haul stuff away, but try to figure out whose it is. And there's a $500 fine if they get to that point for illegal dumping. That's part of this garbage and litter and trash issue that's pretty obvious in our neighborhood, okay? Got anything to add on that?
On our block between 38th and 37th, there's one trash can. When we have a busy weekend, it's overflowing in about 5 minutes. But there was one, I guess, on 30 in front of Bank of America, and they took that one away because no one wanted to maintain it. Oasis and I maintain the one that's on our street, but one trash can per block isn't enough, I guess. But
and that's one that was that's at the TriMet bus stop that TriMet originally put there, I think, right?
Yeah.
And then the two businesses said, "Leave it there.
We'll, yeah, they were going to take it away.
We'll haul the trash away, you know, when it's full." But
on time, you do.
Okay.
So I want to get you to wrap up.
I'll just kind of name the issues, and then if you have questions, maybe we can get into that. But a few people, and these are residents close to Hawthorne, talked about people using their properties for toileting very frequently. Their bushes, their doorways, you know, between the houses, and I think that's also a problem with the some of the businesses in their doorways. Again, where are people supposed to find a toilet if they're out on the street? People living in vehicles, it's an issue we've brought up before. It's still there. The same folks are still living in their vehicles. Commissioner Fritz, I really appreciated your question about, okay, so where can people go if they don't have housing? And for people who choose to or have to live in a camper van or a school bus or whatever, where can they go? Is it okay to park on a residential street and pretend that's an RV park? Or is there some way the city can find places where it's appropriate to park a vehicle like that? And maybe there's a toilet facility or et cetera, okay? But that's still an issue that we're having in the neighborhood, and I see it in other neighborhoods also. Sleeping in business doorways, one of the merchants wrote to me and said it happens, you know, very, very frequently on her doorway. She started to leave a note on her door when she closes at night saying, if you're going to sleep here, could you please be gone by dawn and clean up after yourself? And she said people have actually respected that, and they're cleaning up after themselves. So again, it's just that relationship with people. Finally, I'll just say, you know, we talk about respect for and pride in our neighborhoods as residents. We also have the responsibility to keep it clean and safe, take care of our properties, try to promote that code of behavior ourselves that we expect other people to have. And I don't know, Miranda, why don't you, I'll let you see, you have anything else?
I guess just whoever it is, it doesn't matter what social structure you're from or anything, it's just a respect for the people in the area around you, which really isn't a problem. I mean, Hawthorne is so community and neighborhood supported. You know, there's high traffic every day, Monday, Saturday. It doesn't matter, and everyone, I think, works well together, with a home or without a home. But I mean, there's really such a huge difference now. I mean, I don't have the complaints or problems at all that I did, you know, in the last 3 years, especially during the summer. But I leave at 7 p.m. and, you know, the residents definitely deal with a whole different aspect of, you know, what I don't find very respectful, you know, as far as, you know, their property and stuff like that. So that's a whole different issue, I guess.
Right. Well, thank you both. Appreciate you being here. Appreciate you being good partners. It's nice to see the progress. And Commander and Sergeant and your team, obviously you've built some real goodwill here in every part of the Central City and Hawthorne where you've been doing this work this way. So clearly we're doing it the right way. It's not a one-year affair. It's not something that we're going to stop doing. In fact, I think the question is just how do we do more? Where do we do more next? What other partnerships do we need to enhance this? And I guess another question I want to continue to pose is, are there any partners that ought to be engaged with us that aren't for example, on the Central East Side, are ODOT and the railroad being cooperative, in terms of property owners? Are there other social service agencies or nonprofits that we ought to be engaging in addition to the hardworking ones that we're already partnered with? So how do we redouble this effort and make it more effective in the areas where it's working now, and both geographically and in terms of human resource, how do we expand it? I'm interested in both of those questions.
So, Mayor, the point of clarification, so there is, your intention is to continue this
Absolutely.
Current foot
yeah.
patrol and perhaps expand it into additional geographies?
Absolutely, and okay. it's a resource allocation question for the Police Bureau, which we'll address, but it's also, we've got to have the partnerships to make it work, whether it's JOIN, or Janus, or a neighborhood business district. We've got to have other partners to make this work, because we can't just send well-trained, relationship-oriented police officers out on the street if we don't have partners that are ready to work with them.
And Mr. Mayor, if I may, Commissioner, part of the reason I'm having this sort of report to the council through this work session, and we really, first of all, I want to thank everybody for taking time out of your busy schedules to be here today. This is a group of folks, including all the Bureau staff that are sitting out around the perimeter of the room, and wanted to thank the commissioners because the Bureau have put a lot of time and effort in addition to many of the folks around this table. But part of bringing this forward today is sort of a report back on how this pilot has worked. And obviously you've heard some many good things, but also things that need further work. And that's part of, I think, the discussion here today that needs to continue to be ongoing, is what are the services, what areas of the city, how can we continue to work collaboratively with the partners around the table to build on this success and make sure we also have the right tools to move forward in addition to resources. So I'd say we didn't, unfortunately, come here with all the answers, but it was more to pose, here's the result so far, and that we do need further discussion. And certainly I think that's to be continued.
And does your group also look at the high-impact pedestrian zone designation issues?
That is an administrative issue, and that's under PBOT's purview. So Commissioner Novick has been briefed, and I believe that his staff will be working with some of the partners around the room. I'll hand that off to him.
That's right. But again, I mean, the designation has been used essentially to protect the people who might be sitting on the sidewalk. So if there's a situation where you think they might be pushed into an oncoming TriMet vehicle, then we can take action. But under the program as currently constituted, we can't just say, well, there's a lot of pedestrians here, therefore we're going to tell people they can't sit and lie on the sidewalk.
I understand how it's currently constrained or construed, but I guess that's the question, the policy question. Should we look at a broader definition of what a high-impact pedestrian zone tool might look like? So that's why I was wondering if that group's
tossing that around. A pretty big policy question, which last time it took us 6 months and a lot of work to get to where we got to. So I'm not sure that Commissioner Novick has the capacity to embark on that right now. I want to go back to what the mayor said about who else needs to be involved. And I would have liked to have heard today from folks who live outside on Hawthorne and find out from their perspective, has this been a roaring success? And certainly as we move forward, especially in the Central East Side, we need to include Right to Dream and other groups and individuals experiencing houselessness so that they can tell us what they need. I do have a question, though. I'm looking at our offices here, and to start with, this is really good work, and thank you for the report. Thank you, Jackie, for your coordination. How many or proportion of the officers assigned to the foot patrol are female?
None of them are. They're all men.
And was that intentional, or what's the reason for that?
Well, I'll ask Rick made the selection process. I don't know that it was intentional as much as looking just in terms of, I know we talked about days off, it was a seniority-based system, people that wanted to do the work, the specific type of work, so there was some specific recruitment, but I'll let Rick address that real quickly.
So at the beginning of this, when we first started about talking about staffing it, we put the word out because what I asked for from the front end is I wanted any officer that was going to engage in this work this year to have volunteered for it. We ended up with a staff of 10 officers plus myself. I had 12 people total express an interest in doing this from Central Precinct, and none of them were female officers. Since then, and during the summer, I have received multiple requests and emails from people from across the Bureau who are interested in the work that we're doing. I'm excited by that. But with the framework that we were working with this year, with taking staffing from Central Precinct and applying it within Central Precinct, we just didn't have the ability, especially in a relatively compressed time frame, to start transferring people from all over the Bureau to be a part of this. And we were at our maximum staffing level after the initial selections. So it absolutely was not intentional. And if we had had more interest on the front end, that would have been factored into the selection process. But in the end, not knowing what this was going to look like in the beginning and what we were kind of diving into, the interest was relatively low, with 12 people total volunteering and for a team of 10. And so what you have are the people that were willing to, you know, jump into the abyss on this thing and buy into it from the beginning. And create what we created this year. And if I could, you know, speak to something that was just being talked about very quickly, is that when we talk about other partnerships and who else needs to be involved, for me, the bigger picture is everybody already involved needs to continue to do what they've been doing this year in the same way that we did, and that is take a hard look in the mirror, look within your own organization and see, can we get out of these boxes that we're in a little more? We have been extremely creative and flexible this year. We've asked our partners to get more creative and flexible, and they have done that. We all need to continue to do that. On top of that, the community as a whole needs to do the same thing. And I recognize the impact on business and the struggles that they have and the impact on these neighborhoods and how we had reached a point in the city of frustration to the point where our normal acceptance level had diminished. And what I am hoping on the kind of the other end of this summer is that we can start to get some of that back, because the broad brush that was starting to be used across the community of people on the streets, where the car prowler was being equated to the totally innocent person sitting on a corner, you know, asking for a dollar, that person then becomes the representative of the person that broke into your car, and you're blaming thousands of people on the streets of Portland for one individual's actions. As a community, we need to take a step back from the frustration and start over. Because what we did this year is we invited an entire community of people, welcomed them back to the city of Portland, and they had been told through multiple messaging from everyone, we don't want you here. You're not part of this community. That was the message they received, intentional or not. And we invited them back in and said, we want good people here. We want people here that are invested in this community. And to do that, you need to be aware of how you present yourself, because it reflects on everyone else. And in the same way that you don't want to be blamed for what other people do who look like you, you need to carry yourself in a way that's more responsible and more respectful and join our team, essentially. And in droves, they did that. That when you give the example of somebody putting a sign on their porch that said, if you're going to sleep here, please be gone by dawn and clean up after yourself, and they do it, that's exactly the experience that we had with the people that we interacted with on the street. The vast majority of people, if you talk to them about what the issues are and how they can help those issues, they'll be responsive to that. That leaves you with a handful of people that don't. And then we figure out how to deal with them. And we brought a scalpel to this broad brush argument of when we as a community look at a demographic of people and simply see them as a problem to be solved, we are on the wrong track. And that's the change that we made this year in terms of we dealt with people on an individual basis. We dealt with people within their own families that they created on the street. We in learning the hierarchy of a group of people, or a tribe as they often call themselves, that, you know, you go to the person who carries the most respect and you get their buy-in, and then they influence the people underneath them. Really quickly, because I know I get long-winded, but in the issue of, you know, the community involvement, and we talked about garbage on Hawthorne. And to give you an idea of how creative and flexible we were this year, we picked up garbage this year. Uniformed officers picking up garbage out of the gutter. And you know what it did? I'll give a specific example out on Hawthorne, where I'm walking on Hawthorne somebody had knocked open one of the newspaper bins and the gutter was littered with papers. And there's people drinking beers at the Baghdad, and there's people walking up and down the streets, and there's a traveler sitting on the corner, you know, asking for spare change. And here's this complete mess in the gutter on Hawthorne. And I kind of looked around at everybody and said, all right, well, let's get outside the box. And I went out and I started picking up garbage. You know what happened? Somebody got up from the table and came over and started picking up garbage. The person got up from the corner, came over and started picking up garbage. And pretty soon we got armloads of garbage. We didn't have anywhere to put it. You know, and I ended up walking down with a stack of dirty newspapers until I found a business where I poked my head in and said, hey, do you have a recycling bin I can throw these in? And they said, great, and we did that. When I walked back past the Baghdad, the group of people that were there, beers went up in the air like this. And people said to me as I walked past, we should have helped you with that. That's the kind of community-level involvement and community-level of awareness that we're trying to get back so that people take ownership. That I've told the story before in meetings that, you know, we talk about kind of regular folks on Hawthorne getting up and cleaning garbage out of the gutter because we set an example. We saw the same thing with 100 people in Hawthorne that, you know, the people complain about water on Waterfront Park and how that looked this year. And we had a group of travelers on Waterfront Park get shoulder to shoulder and clean up a 100-yard stretch of Waterfront Park. There wasn't a piece of garbage left on there. Just invite them. Invite them to be part of the solution instead of being part of the problem. And the vast majority of them will jump at that opportunity. They live the way they do, and this is, I hate generalizing this way, but if you disenfranchise somebody from a community, then they have no stake in it. And if they have no stake in it, then they don't care anymore. And when they don't care anymore, then they're going to be a problem. And we invited them back into this community and invited them to be part of the solution. And by the thousands, they jumped at that opportunity.
Mr. Mayor? Could we suspend the rules for a round of applause?
Yeah. I might follow up on my previous point. I think it is exemplary police work and community engagement. I'd like to see women and people of color being seen to be doing that on behalf of the police, because that's the bigger picture. And particularly as we've heard from Dennis that 80% of the females living outside have been abused, I think they're more likely to engage if there's a demographic of the police that looks and they relate to. Thank you.
Sergeant, I hope you feel free at all these gatherings to go on because you have a lot to tell us that's enormously helpful. And first of all, to your point about generalizations and stereotypes, I completely agree with what you said. And if I've learned anything in 6 years is that they're really not that helpful to making good public policy. And if what we did is just allowed people to make generalizations and stereotypes about police and homeless people, I don't think we'd ever make much progress because they are often founded on either ignorance or bias. And we got to get past that. We got to get to the person, not to the easy generalization. And frankly, on the question of garbage, if we wanted to generalize and stereotype as someone who now regularly commutes to work, I would say that there is a garbage problem downtown. And if we took the same approach that sometimes comes up with homelessness, the way we'd address it would be to criminalize the operation of food carts. Because the garbage is around the perimeter of parking lots after a busy night that hasn't been collected. And I haven't heard anyone say that we ought to go after the food cart. So again, I think we always have to be careful about generalizations and stereotypes. But to Senator Dingfelder, the question that I have coming out of this excellent discussion is, council has prioritized homelessness and hunger as three of our top priorities as a body. We're hearing about a pilot that's working, and clearly, it's like with any pilot, you need resources because it's resource intensive. One thing I've once again heard, and I know from my own experience, is that the 60% that the mayor wants to reach, who maybe are declining now services, may very well be people that are less likely to respond to a person in a blue uniform, and more likely to respond to a gang outreach person or a join work. It just may be because of their own life experience, nothing to do with the officer involved. So I think this is a time for us to put pen and paper together and say, to continue or perhaps expand this pilot, what would it cost? I'm assuming there are budget, overtime, staffing, other issues. to partner with our trusted agencies that do the outreach with you, what would that cost? And then to take some of the ideas that I've heard here today and before about expanding capacity for storage. I mean, storage is a big deal. We hear a lot about things blocking sidewalks. Frankly, we are privileged. When we go to another city and go to a train station, we check our bags if we're just there for the day. We don't have a similar system for someone that needs to check their baggage for a few weeks because they're looking for a shelter or a job. So, and some of the places that we have put together are, I think we could all agree, inaccessible. Storage needs to be within a walking distance or an easy bus ride. It can't be in a place that's inaccessible. So what would it cost to reasonably expand storage capacity? Bud Clark Commons is well beyond capacity. What are some options there? What are some additional housing options? I'm not the biggest fan of the shelter model because it's high resource, low return, but there's a place for it, particularly for people who are at risk. But beyond that, what's the additional resources? I think this discussion gives us a framework for a sense of urgency around looking at what kind of supplemental funding the police, housing, and related bureaus need to do the job. And I think you've made a very compelling case. And I'd like to see on paper what that would look like going into our next budget cycle. So thank you.
Good.
Commissioner, if I just follow up on your point about storage, I think that people having their stuff on the sidewalk is a serious issue. In some cases, it's hard for people to get out of their cars on their passenger side because they're stepping onto stuff. And it does make the sidewalk look unwelcoming. It seems like somebody has sort of appropriated the part of the sidewalk for their personal use. However, if people don't have another place to put their stuff, it would be problematic to say, just, you know, have your stuff off the sidewalk. So I think that having stuff lying around is a serious issue that it's hard to see how we address unless we solve the storage problem that Commissioner Fish just mentioned.
Well, I just wanted to say, I mean, I'm very supportive of this effort you're doing, and I wanted to ask, is the travel and lodging industry a member of your group? Because I know they're certainly very allergic to street incidents, and we've had conventions cancel after the stabbing and things like that. So how I know they're maybe represented through Clean and Safe. I guess I would like to ask, maybe they have a more of a direct voice.
Right. Yeah, we've done, work in regular communication with Travel Portland, PBA, BOMA. I mean, that's really been, was kind of my mantra last year coming out of last summer was, we're all sort of in this together. And that's really been the encouraging piece to it that, the support of the PBA, the support of Travel Portland, others to help us, be successful, give us some space to kind of do our work, and then come back together here. So we're touching all of those bases. Just quickly in from our perspective, this is something that I'm passionate about, believe in, and very committed to at Central Precinct. It is a challenge. I'm not one to to complain or to whine about resources. They impact all the bureaus. They impact all the businesses. Everybody faces the same thing: time, money, and people. This particular project, we did take out a hide, so to speak. We moved officers, some other shifts. We ran shorter in our traditional staffing method this summer on afternoon shifts, supplementing with these officers. And really, it's a credit to them and the work they did in sort of doing double duty, being attentive to my direction, my expectations, as well as the traditional policing model of responding to calls for service and supporting. And within our own house, there's still a lot of work to do in terms of how we manage our resources and adopt this policing style. But as Rick had mentioned, I've been most moved by internally is the response of so many other officers saying, "Hey, I want to be a part of that. I want to do that." And so organizationally, I know we're having conversations about how to do that. And I don't think this is philosophically the attitude of the officers is certainly applicable citywide. The actual boots on the ground, I think, is more, Central Precinct, Central East Side. I could see St. John's, Kenton, Hollywood, Park Rose. I mean, there are other parts of the city that would be conducive to this type of model. It's not, as relative, per se, in, Arrow Heights or something where you have a residential neighborhood, Eastmoreland, so to speak. But, my desire is that all of our officers would embrace philosophically the direction that we're trying to go and we want to be a part of. But, you know, I'm looking forward to having those ongoing discussions here in the next few months. How do we expand it throughout the organization?
We will do just that. So, Jack, anything else that you'd like us to ask about or
yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. And I'll just follow up on a couple of the commissioners' comments. And similar to Debbie, I mean, I am not a social service expert. And when I first started working on this issue, besides having spent a decade learning about the criminal justice system from the state perspective, I felt a little bit out of my comfort zone. But we have amazing amount of expertise partially around this table in this room, and we have incredible resources already working on it. I think part of our challenge is what we've heard today is, you know, targeted resources where we need to make sure that those are in the budget for the city, where we need to make asks to the county, where, and Mark, you're in a great position because you're straddling, you know, working with the city and the county can help us look at strategic partnerships. And then, you know, the city has been looking and trying to deal with the storage issue, but to be honest, we've been looking at city facilities. So the question is, especially with PBA Clean and Safe and many businesses around the table and room, can you help us look at some other options? Because that is a barrier to helping, you know, find solutions for folks who have stuff on the street and they have nowhere to put it. We're just really shuffling people along and moving them to other parts of the city. So those are some of the asks that I think come out of this work session where we need to figure out, you know, next steps, and certainly as we prepare for the next budget cycle, where some of those will factor into the city budget, working with the county, state legislature, and working with our partners.
We have experimented with, like, pop-up storage places, and the PBA was enormously helpful when we used a property on Burnside, and we partnered with a nonprofit that staffed it, and we had an interim use. We do have buildings that are transitional, where even, you know, if you pencil it out, I think Sally knows this better than I do, but it's just about amortizing your costs. You just figure out what's the length of time you need, bring a partner in, run it. It's enormously beneficial to the people who can access it. But I do think it needs to be proximate to people downtown. And Bud Clark Commons has storage inside and storage outside, but it's well beyond capacity. And by the way, there is a piece of dormant property there that might be accessible. So I would urge us also to look at short-term solutions, not necessarily long-term solutions, because they're beneficial, particularly during inclement weather.
Well, thank you all. Appreciate this both report and discussion. Some of the next steps obviously are budgetary for us as we work on the Police Bureau's budget and others. And then, again, in terms of partnerships, we ought to make sure we put out the call. I appreciate that point about near-term on storage, but I suspect the problem's not going to go away either. So I think I'd be interested in finding a longer-term facility that we could use for that purpose as well. Well, thank you all very much. Appreciate the good work and a lot of real progress in one season. So well done. Thank you very much.